When did you begin to expand your product line?
Well, we started, of course, making just one model of the oscilloscope, but as soon as that was engineered and in production, we started on other models, because that you need a fair spectrum of instruments to cover the various needs, and even you needed an even larger number then than you do now, because we know how to make them lots more flexible now than we did at that time. So we started expanding the number of oscilloscopes immediately, as fast as we could. And then we brought out a number of models, and then there was a need for various other electronic instruments which were related to the use of oscilloscopes, signal generators of various types and so on, and we had to have those to engineer and manufacture oscilloscopes, and other people needed them, so our line expanded in that way too at the same time.
Do you recall when it might have been?
Well, the first oscilloscope was available in June of 47. That seems like a long time after the start, but actually we don't engineer any oscilloscope models in that short of time now. During that same time, we had to get this building built. And that wasn't extremely simple either, because everything was in short supply. And we all had had lots of veterans' priorities, so we got materials as quickly as anyone could have for that. But it was about a year before the building was built, which is not an unusual time, really. And so as soon as we got that one out in June, I'm sure at that time we were starting work, or had started work on the design of the next model. And then there were a succession of models. Generally in increasing complexity, but not always. Some of them were also simpler.
When did your corporation enter into the international market?
Well, we've been in the international field almost as long as in the domestic one, because in electronics there really isn't any difference between the needs of people working in one country or another, and English is a fairly universal language, especially for scientists, so that didn't cause much problem. My first exports were to Sweden, and I'm not sure what year that would be, but it was probably 1948. 49, somewhere along there. And then we've had an export, major export market during almost our entire history.
And I think I also read that you have several plants.
Yes.
In England, I believe. Where else?
Yes,
were some of the other locations?
Well, we have plants on. We have one in England, in the London area. And we have a plant on the island of Guernsey in the English Channel, and we have one in Holland in a city called Heerenveen in northern Holland, and we have a 50-50 owned company in Japan, Tektronix and the Sony Corporation are partners in a company there that builds Tektronix equipment for sale in Japan and Far East, and also designs and builds instruments that we sell in the United States and the rest of the world.
How long have you been associated with Sony?
How long would that be? Let's see. Let's see, 1956, I think, maybe. More than 20 years.
A long association.
Yeah.
You said earlier that there were limitations on your building, but I was wondering on your product advancement. I'm thinking of your progressive space for manufacture and the tools for manufacturing your product and technology. How did you handle these problems?
Well, you have a lot of good people who are willing to take on jobs that need to be done. We've never been really one to hire some expert from the outside who has a great reputation in the area. And at that time, we did a lot of it ourselves. I don't mean that we did everything ourselves. We certainly had architects for the buildings and engineers, and we hired people with engineering and whatever training was needed. But a lot of them ended up doing things which were somewhat different than what they had started to, and that's continued to this day. People who have changed their profession completely but still work for the same company, even though they're in quite different jobs than what they started. We have a very large variety of jobs, and we have a pretty good variety all the time because we started off with a high degree of integration. We made a lot more of the oscilloscope than most people did of similar things. We have more of our own manufacturing and less purchase. And we still do that, although we buy whatever we can, and in anything that where our use of it is just the same as everybody else's, why you don't have any particular advantage to making it. But where you need something that's a little bit different to suit your particular need, then if you have the facilities to make it, you can make it in such a way that better suits you and it results in a much better product. It may not be a better device, whatever it is that you're making. It may only be different, but for your purposes, it's a lot better, because when people who build components for wide use have to make them with a lot of compromises so they fit a very broad market. And sometimes those compromises are very harmful to you. And you might even you might want a thing that might actually be easier to make and simpler, because you don't need some of the characteristics, but you need a certain characteristic emphasized, and that may just be one of the run-of-the-mill and the rest of it. So we've had a highly integrated activity for a long time and still do.
How did you and Mr. Murdoch divide your time with the company as far as I guess engineering, research, and administration, and that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, Jack was the general manager, and he was he had business experience, and at the start I confined myself almost entirely to the engineering aspect. I was the only engineer at the start. Then we changed that and got some more of them before very long. But engineering was my part of it, and the business areas were Jack's at the start. Although certainly these areas weren't exclusive or anything like that. In a small company, there isn't any such thing as a compartmentalization. Everybody does something.
Although
some of the time.
You weren't really small very long, it seems.
Well, no. That's true. But then we had a lot of other people who were good and were doing a lot of the things that we did.
I'm sure you were probably very shocked when Mr. Murdoch was killed.
Yeah.
Did his death affect the company in any way?
No, not directly. Jack had been taking less direct interest in the company over the years, and at that time was not active in the company management at all. He was the chairman of the board and a director, and he was around a lot, but he was pursuing mostly his own interests at that time, so it didn't affect the management of the company at all. We were very sad to lose him as a valued associate and so on. Jack incidentally had probably more than anyone else to do with many of the characteristics that we have around here. He was always very friendly and very open, and was very good with the problems with people, and I think it was a lot of his influence that we've always had been on a first name basis, and we've downplayed titles and positions and so on. I think all that was part of it. Is Jack's sense of ethics and good business practices and so on were important to us at the start, and setting a tone which was continued all the time.
That, in a way, that's part of my next question, because I was going to comment that your company has been enormously successful, due in part, I would think, to some of your innovative personnel practices.
I think so.
What are some of your philosophies concerning the tech employee?
Oh.
It's a big question,
yeah,
I know.
That's a big question. I guess, fundamentally, we believe that everyone is an individual, and everyone wants to do a good job, and the job of the company is to make it possible for them to do it. And I think we also we believe that all people are honest, and that we won't make rules just to perhaps take care of a few situations which would require them if those rules will handicap everybody else. We'd rather pay a little price if necessary to have a large amount of freedom rather than to have everything closely circumscribed in rules and so on. And we've been able to hold that pretty well, even as a quite large company. You're never able to do it quite as well in a large company. But I think the key thing is that you're firmly convinced that everyone is honest and everyone wants to do the best possible job, and no one is hurt quite as much as if they can't do a good job for whatever reason, and they know it before anybody else does.
Your lack of formality has been demonstrated, I think, in something you said about not acquiring a bigger office with your advancement, or no personal parking places, that sort of thing. I think. Interesting concept, and certainly you've been very successful with it. Do you think, because you feel this way about your employees, that there wouldn't be any need for your employees, say, to unionize?
That's what we feel. We feel we can provide all the communications channels and do the various things that a union would do, and do them better, and not have any sort of a we-they situation. I think that's very important, and some people assume that any company of any size has to be unionized, but of course that's not true. There are very large companies in the electronics business who are not. Oh, IBM is not a union company. Texas Instruments is not a union. Hewlett Packard, Eastman Kodak. In the electronics business especially, there are lots of companies. I think it just came because of the way they were started, and the way they grew, and it's not necessarily the easiest way, because a union does a lot of things you have to that you do, and takes a different orientation. But I really think it's very worthwhile thing to do.
You've even gone so far as to establish a human relations department.
Sure.
Yeah. Does that facilitate the handling of these kinds of problems?
Sure. We have the personnel, I'm sure just what they're called at the moment, but they're people from that are involved in the personnel department who are physically in the various buildings and so on. And people can go to them with any kind of a problem that they would have, and if they can't help it or do anything about it, the chances are pretty good that they know where to go and how to get these people to someone who can help them. And that's kind of the thing that maybe typically you go to a union steward. But this is in many cases it's the same kind of thing that they go to. In other cases, there are many things that need to be done that are not of a nature of being antagonistic or opposed to the company. You need something done, and you don't know how to get to it. So. It takes a lot of effort in that type. We have another organization that's interesting in there. I don't know if you have any about our employee rep system.
No.
Do you have any?
Not familiar with that. Tell me, please.
Okay. Well, we used to, when we had I guess it was when we had about 200 people. That was about all we could. Well, we had more people than we could get in some sort of area to have a general meeting discussion. And so we felt we had to have some kind of a representative set up. And so we divided the company into various areas, and there's physical areas. They weren't necessarily, there might be more than one type of operation in that area. In some cases there were, in some cases not. But anyway, each of these areas elected a representative. And I think that we probably had about, I guess it was about one representative at the start, probably for 20 or 30 people, something like that. And these people met with the management of the company, and they met with their own people for periods. I don't remember now. I think it was an hour every 2 weeks or something of that nature, and they would ask their representative to bring whatever questions that they had, and then they'd be answered in the most appropriate way. Sometimes it was by doing something about it, sometimes it was by giving the rep an answer to give to them, sometimes it was by calling them and talking to them, or whatever seemed most appropriate. And that's grown now to where we have a lot more area reps than we had employees at that time. But it's gone on for many years, and it's an important part of the company. They do things like it's really an attempt to get people to know more about the company too. At their regular meetings, I guess the meetings are monthly now, they have speakers from various parts of the country, and sometimes they go on tours of other areas and so on, try to find out, what's going on in other areas. And well, they take care of a few other things. They've been concerned for a long time with Red Cross blood drawing. The United Good Neighbors has been very active in that. The area reps go on agency tours and all that sort of thing. And then they can tell their people about what they've seen. And these area reps serve for period. Not sure what it is today, but it used to be about 8 months, and then they'd go off, and then another one would be re-elected, and it has a kind of a continuing thing. The one who's elected is elected a couple months in advance and serves with them, so that there's a smooth transition and so on.
Is that only in the Beaverton plant, or is
no?
It
that's
all
everywhere. Uh-huh.
You
yeah.
have a remarkable record as far as length of service for your employees.
Yes.
I was amazed when I read about your Guernsey plant and the employees who stayed on there. It was just rather startling.
The Guernsey plant has been a very good kind of operation from all standpoints. Guernsey is primarily a summer resort for the British, although it's much closer to France than it is to England. It had a very seasonal employment pattern, and one of their big products there are growing vegetables, especially tomatoes. They grow lots of, they're just acres of greenhouses. When you fly in, you can see the light from all these greenhouses. But anyway, there was no technical activity at all outside of the telephone system. And so any Guernseyman who was technically inclined had to leave home, in fact. And the Guernseymen are very independent group of people. They're not English, and Guernsey is an independent country. It's not it's represented by Britain, and it generally adopts similar laws to Britain, but it has its own government, and its chief officer is the bailiff, so it's a bailiwick. Jersey, which is another island nearby, is very similar, and they have their own money, and they have their own stamps, and they have their own passports, and so on. But they have a special relationship with England. England can't assess them anything very well for defense because they didn't defend them during the war. They were occupied by the Germans.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And it was pretty hard on them. But they have a relationship with England, somewhat like Puerto Rico has with the United States. And things that are manufactured in Guernsey generally are considered to be manufactured in England, vice versa. But they have essentially no duties because they have no industry to protect. So the British come over and buy watches and perfume and jewelry and all this sort of stuff. But our plant there has, which is grown up, we have about 600 people there now. We're the largest employer on the island. And we have a very good relationship with the government, and I think we're considered a good citizen of the island. It's a popular place. A lot of Englishmen would like to live there because they have very low taxes, and it's a beautiful place. And it's not very big, and the coasts are very attractive, swimming and boating and all that sort of, but they allow very limited immigration to there because it'd be overrun if they did. But anyway, we provide them with a stable year-round employment for people who want it, and we have very good stable operation, and they're very, very good people. They have many of the characteristics of English, they speak the same language and so on, but they're also somewhat different, and they're a more independent group than they don't have anywhere near as much socialist government sort of thing. It's much more I can take care of myself kind of activity. There's very low crime. You can't get away on this small island.
It seems like here you wouldn't have those limiting geographical and cultural factors, so probably your employee turnover rate is a bit higher. But even considering, is it...
No, it's very low.
Here?
Yeah, it's very, very low.
I was just
very
going to say, is it low here?
Yes, we have a much lower turnover rate than is normal for industry, and I think several reasons for that. One is the great variety of jobs that we have, and the ability to transfer to a different kind of a job, whether it's crosswise or upwards, or whatever. But and still be in the same company. We have a very active program of that type. We have our educational program, which are very important. We put great emphasis on that in terms of the individual improvements so that you can take on, prepare yourself to take on bigger and bigger jobs. The tech educational program is a very large activity. And we couldn't, like in Guernsey though, we have just about the limit of people there. And we don't expect that to ever grow, but it's very nice.
You've been honored by a number of honorary degrees for your activities. From a personal standpoint, as being the chairman of the board of a major corporation, affected your way of life, do you think? Your living pattern at all?
No, I don't think so. It's given me the freedom to do some things that I probably wouldn't have been able to do, but I don't. I don't regard it as anything very unusual, and I've never been involved really with many of the other kinds of activities. We don't really have much connection with the other firms in the city because we don't, not like a retail establishment or something like that. We have very few customers in Oregon. And our businesses outside of Oregon. Of course, that's one of the really great things from an Oregon standpoint about a company like ours is almost all the revenue that it gets is from outside the state. So that's those are much more valuable dollars than recirculating dollars in a community from one place to the next.
You have several sizable parcels of land in Oregon. Do you anticipate expansion in other areas in the state?
Yes, we've been trying to develop some sort of a land bank, I guess, in a sense, of having land available in other parts of the state, which we think will be developing, and where we think we can provide a very useful role of employment in a type of activity that's not there, so people there can stay and other people can come. And it takes a long time to go through all of the regulations and whatnot that you have to go through, and there aren't too many places to. So we think we'll have activities in many of these areas in the future, and in every case we've been trying to buy big enough tracts so that you can so that we can expand on that tract without having to get another one, because there's probably another one's not available adjacent to it.
So you're implying that you're anticipating future expansion of the industry?
Oh, I think so.
Do you think, will tech be competing against similar local manufacturers?
Well, we don't have any. There's no one really here that competes with us. There could be at some time. In Vancouver, we're going to be very close to a new plant that Hewlett-Packard Company is going to build there. And they're, of course, our major competitor in the electronic oscilloscope and electronic instrumentation business. But that plant is not designed to make anything which is directly competitive with us. But I don't think it would make any difference really if they were, because we're competing for customers with them every day all over the world, so where the thing is manufactured doesn't have much to do with it.
You've placed a lot of emphasis on customer service too.
Oh yes. Yeah, that's a very important part of it. If you buy something and it doesn't work, now things are getting pretty complicated, and service is, always has been an extremely important part. I think you know that yourself.
Yes.
From whatever you we got an example.
Yes.
Right.
You want to take the cutting machine. Oh dear. You have always shown an interest in your employees, and you indicated that you found that it was best for your business to do that.
Sure.
And I believe on a personal standpoint that you've also developed philanthropic interest. And I was wondering what it was in your background that led you to your humanitarian concern.
Oh, see, I don't know, but I just realized I'm going to have to make a phone call at least.
Okay.
Here. Can I?
Certainly.
Can you?